The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Love. Courage. Truth. Glenn Beck.
All right, we've got a lot to say about the budget. Last night had to be one of the weirdest and ridiculous nights of government that I have maybe ever seen. If you watch C-SPAN... Let me rephrase this, because this is a phrase that has never been uttered before. Hey, did you watch C-SPAN last night? No! But if you would have watched C-SPAN, you might have actually been entertained, if it didn't mean slavery to our children. Last night's theatrics, if it had a musical score, it would have been somewhere between circus music and the Benny Hill theme. I expected that three-wheel car to come in and just tip over. The Senate agreed 2 days ago on a long-term bipartisan budget deal that is the equivalent of a massive raging dumpster fire. Now, here's the thing. This isn't actually a budget. This is a continuing resolution. This is vote for everything the government does, no exceptions, no changes, except a change in increasing the spending, or shut down the government. This set the tone for last night when Rand Paul stood up in front of Senate Republicans and called out their hypocrisy. Paul didn't pull any punches. He straight up called them all hypocrites and warned that a, quote, day of reckoning is coming. Thank you, Rand Paul, for being a voice of reason. Thank you for actually warning the country on what's coming. If they don't pay attention, their own blood and the blood of their children are on their hands. You did your job. Same with Mike Lee. Rand Paul is right. And every Republican in that room that did agree with him back in 2011, they all fought the Democrats to install budget caps. This is out of control spending. This new budget obliterates all those debt caps and sets the precedent for this to get even worse in the years to come. Wow. The Republicans. They suddenly have become enlightened. They've had a change of heart. They don't want children to starve to death anymore. They're not trying to kill all of the people that just can't get hospital care. Oh, my gosh. Or did they actually not ever really believe in fiscal responsibility to begin with? Or were they just playing partisan politics? Nah, spoiler alert, it's the last part. The truth is, they just wanted to win in 2011, and so they knew if we impose debt caps, well, we'll convince the American people that if you vote for us, things are going to be different. Well, they are different, to the tune of $2 trillion of more debt in the next 2 years. That's great. So bravo to Rand Paul, Mike Lee, and anyone else that stood up and actually said out loud what some on the Senate floor might have been thinking and feeling if they were still thinking and feeling people. Paul kept his criticism going long enough to delay the vote, which actually caused the government to shut down just for a little bit, just a couple of minutes. In the end, it was valiant but a losing effort. The Senate voted 71-28 to pass the deal. Democrats voted against the deal, but not because of the budget. It didn't do enough for those who are here illegally. It shot over to the House for a quick vote to try to avoid the shutdown extending into Friday. Over at the House, Nancy Pelosi urged her colleagues not to show their hand until they knew how many Republicans would vote yes. And as the pressure finally mounted, she declared that she wouldn't vote because of DACA, of course. But she wouldn't hold anybody else back from voting for it. One by one, Democrats voted yes. They started to flood in. I don't know if Nancy Pelosi is just full-fledged. not in her right mind, or if she's auditioning for an acting gig. Because neither her theatrics last night nor her 8-plus-hour-long DACA speech had any value beyond pure theater. Last night, if you watched C-SPAN, which nobody did, it was kind of entertaining. If you're suicidal, if you were bored, nerdy, and really rooting for the destruction of America, you loved it. What else beyond a good movie or bad, ineffective government can deliver laughs and tears all in one episode?
It's Friday, February 9th. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
If you are disgusted, as I am, by what is happening in Congress, I want to play something from Mike Lee. And he explains, because the American people are like, why can't they just all get into a room and work it out? He explains this. He says, the reason why, we're in the room. We're in the room right now. We're all together. But they're not asking us to work it out. Because this is a continuing resolution. And this is not the way you govern anything. Because it leaves the American people out. The American people, what happens is Mitch McConnell and Chuck Schumer get together behind closed doors and they make every spending decision. Then they bring it to the floor and they say to the Senate and to the House, vote for this, all of it, no changes, or shut the government down. Well, gang, what is that? That's not our republic. That's not the way it works. We've been concerned. We were concerned under Obama that there might be a dictatorship. The left is now concerned that under Donald Trump, there might be a dictatorship. There might be a dictatorship. There already is a dictatorship. And it's happening in the House and the Senate. The dictators are Chuck Schumer and Mitch McConnell. They are dictating. You vote for this or I'll throw you to the wolves. You vote for all of the things that Chucky and I have just worked out, including things that go wildly against everything that your voters may have voted for, the things that your supporters went into the voting booth and said, they're going to do this. You don't even have a voice. You shut it down or you take it all. Here's how Mike Lee explained this to, tried to explain this to America, but America wasn't listening. Listen to his explanation about the grocery store.
I've thought about this on many occasions, and how there are very few circumstances in our day-to-day lives that are like the way Congress spends money. It's occurred to me that if you moved into a new area, a very remote area, and you had access to only one grocery store for many, many miles, for many, many hours, and you were on your way home from work, your spouse called you and said, stop at the store, pick up bread, milk, and eggs. And so you go to the store and you get your grocery cart, you go to the bread aisle and you put a loaf of bread in your cart and a carton of milk and a dozen eggs. And you get to the checkout counter and you put out your bread and your milk and your eggs. And the cashier rings those things up and says, I'm sorry, you may not purchase bread, milk, and eggs unless you also purchase a half ton of iron ore and a bucket of nails and a book about cowboy poetry and a Barry Manilow album. In fact, this is a special kind of store where you have to buy all of those things. And in fact, you have to buy one of every item in this entire store in order to buy any of these things, including the bread, the milk, and the eggs. Well, that would start to approximate what it feels like to spend money in Congress, where we're told you can't fund any part of government unless you're willing to fund all of government, subject to such changes as the few people who write the continuing resolution might insert. And you, by the way, having been duly elected by the citizens of your state, will be left out of the process other than to exercise the binary choice of yes or no. And so, Mr. President, we've seen that this is how we get to be $20 trillion in debt, soon to be $22 trillion in debt. We don't get to be $20 trillion, soon to be $22 trillion in debt, without a whole lot of agreement on part of a whole lot of people to do that. It's a bipartisan exercise, to be sure. Bipartisanship is necessary, but the fact that it's bipartisan doesn't always make it holy. You don't get to be $20 trillion in debt without a whole lot of Republicans agreeing with a whole lot of Democrats that we're going to do precisely that. It might inure to the benefit of a few people who stand to benefit every time the government gets bigger or more expensive, every time we do things this way, but it hurts everyone else. The process matters. The fact is, we will not always come to an agreement as to how much we ought to spend. We will not always come to an agreement as to those things on which we will be spending the requisite amount of money. But I think we should be able to agree that the American people deserve a process, one that allows them to be heard through the people's own elected representatives.
This is Mike Lee last night explaining we can get angry about the spending. If you're on the left, you can be angry about DACA. But that's not the problem here. The problem is there's no debate. The problem is the continuing resolution. The problem is we haven't had a government pass a budget since Bush was in office. That's the problem. The continuing resolutions mean that you are cut out of the process because your elected senator, your elected representative has no voice, no way to stand up and say, wait a minute, this part of the spending shouldn't be happening. This we can cut back and still fund the rest of the government. This is a dictatorship. And the dictators are not in the Oval. The dictators are in the Senate. The dictators are in the House. And they're called Republican and Democratic leadership. They call all of the shots. They are dictating every single dollar. And they're telling all of the other representatives, get in line or I throw you to the wolves. If you want to talk about spending, let's play the gas station audio from Rand Paul.
The Department of Defense, last year, we found this out, spent $45 million on a natural gas station in Afghanistan. $45 million. It was projected to cost $500,000. 86 some odd overruns, you know, of cost overruns, $45 million. So you're scratching your head and you're saying, natural gas station, what is that? We don't have one in my town. We don't have any in my town either. They didn't have any in Afghanistan. But you know what? They decided that they needed to reduce the carbon footprint of Afghanistan.
Oh, dear God.
All right. They wanted to reduce the carbon footprint of Afghanistan. I thought the military's job was to kill the enemy. So the military's job now is to reduce their carbon footprint. So they bought a $45 million gas station that serves up natural gas. And guess what they discovered? They kept waiting. So there's a guy sitting next to the pump. You can imagine him sitting on a stool and he's waiting for customers. No one ever came. And then someone said, oh my goodness, they don't have any cars that run on natural gas. Well, that would probably be the same if you came to my town in Kentucky. Almost nobody's got a car in America. They live in a primitive state in Afghanistan, and you're expecting them to have natural gas cars? So they said, well, gosh, we already built this $45 million gas station.
Dear God, no.
Maybe we should buy them some cars.
Oh, my
gosh. They bought them some cars with your money. They paid for the gas station with your money. Now they bought them some cars with your money. But then the people still wouldn't come in. They said, we don't have any money. And they said, okay, well, we've got the gas station. We've got your cars. You need a credit card. So we gave them credit cards. So they have a U.S. credit card that you pay for to take their natural gas car that you paid for to go to a natural gas station because we're reducing the carbon footprint in Afghanistan.
I mean, that story.
Oh.
Unbelievable.
Congratulations, Republicans. We have the House, we have the Senate, and we have the White House. When we have all three, things are going to change. Let me talk about something happy. Let me talk about Valentine's Day. I mean, let me talk about the person in your life that you love and loves you, and things make sense in the world. For Valentine's Day, take care of her. Take care of him. Make sure that they know, man, Tanya, I could not live without you. You make me a better man. You make me want to be a better man. Send her some beautiful roses from 1-800-Flowers.com. I'm sitting here and I'm looking at these roses now who have been in the studios for a couple of days, and they are just starting to bloom. They're just starting to open up. Beautiful red roses. And right now you can get 18 red roses for only $29.99, or you can upgrade to 24 roses for only $10 more. It's an unbelievable offer from 1-800-Flowers. 18 red roses for $29.99, or upgrade to 24 red roses for only $10 more. The roses from 1-800-Flowers.com are picked at their peak and shipped overnight, so they are fresh. Valentine's Day is only 5 days away, so take advantage now. By the way, you could send flowers to Stu. It's his birthday today. Happy birthday,
Thank
Stu.
You. Thank you.
Pick your delivery date and let 1-800-Flowers.com handle the rest. Valentine's Day, 1-800-Flowers.com. Do it now, 1-800-Flowers.com, promo code Beck.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Glenn Beck.
You know, I would love, libertarians are missing the opportunity of a lifetime. Libertarians could actually make all the difference. People are looking for an end of this nonsense, but listen to this. Millennials want a different party. They would drop the current party that they're in at a rate of 71% if they had one. Reason reported on Wednesday that Larry Sharp, one of the more serious libertarian candidates who came in second for the race in 2016 for VP, recently resigned from his post as an alternate representative for Region 8 and Libertarian National Committee, and for a good reason. Sharp couldn't stomach the vice chair of the Libertarian National Committee, Arvin Vohara, who recently posted on Facebook that an adult having sex with a 14-year-old is not the state's business, and those that are engaged in military service should be seen as immoral killers. Sharp didn't want Vohara kicked out of the party for these views. He said he's more than welcome. You can have those points of views because we're not in the business of thought police. But he wanted him taken out of his position so someone with a little more sense could help lead the party for the future. And the Libertarian Party voted no. What the hell is wrong with you people? Seriously, what is wrong with you?
What do you mean by you people? People, pedophiles? Is that who you're going after now?
Well, hate monger? Yeah, I am. What is wrong with... Look, I understand having different points of view. I understand having a big party. I understand. But if you are... Your leadership thinks that an adult can have sex with a 14-year-old, you should not be in a leadership role. What is wrong with you?
Unless it's NAMBLA, right? Like at NAMBLA, you can be in the leadership role there.
Yes.
That's a good place.
Right.
And, you know, like he's an anarchist. So he believes, he also said in the statement that he believes there should be no government. Now, good. I understand that. There's people who out there who believe it. But why are you in a political party in leadership of a party that's trying to get elected if you believe there's no government? There should be no government at all.
You know, Penn Jillette, good friend of mine.
Mm-hmm.
He believes, he says, I'm really more of an anarchist.
An anarcho-capitalist.
Yes.
Is what
okay. Yeah. So he believes in almost no government, if no government at all. But he has also said, Glenn, you and I are not going to have an argument for 30 years. I just want to make the government smaller. We'll get down to what is really necessary in 30 years. It'll take us 30 years to get there. I have no problem with that because you're not saying, hey, by the way, you know, you vote for us and there's not going to be any laws. You want to have sex with an 8-year-old? Who doesn't? Huh? Am I right?
Glenn Beck, Mercury.
You can't start a diet on the weekend. It's impossible. That's why Monday is the perfect day to start a diet, because you're coming off of the weekend where maybe you had a little bit of too much to eat, a little bit too much to drink, and you need to take a positive step. That's Riduzone. Let me get you started on Riduzone right now. Riduzone is what I take. I love it. It's been helping me lose weight, and it is it's a really cool story. It's a local Texas company, and they went through and they went through a bunch of studies and found that there's some stuff in olive oil that actually helps you speed up your metabolism and control your appetite. I don't know how it works. I can just tell you that it does. One of our Blaze reporters, Sarah Gonzalez, lost over 100 pounds on her own, and now she takes Riduzone to control her cravings. She says it's so much easier to control her appetite, and she's not thinking about food all the time. Try Riduzone. Give it a shot. You're going to save 30% off right now with the offer code STU. It's Riduzone.com, R-I-D-U-Z-O-N-E.com. That's Riduzone.com, offer code STU for 30% off. Go there now, Riduzone.com.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Hello and welcome to the program. I am so glad that you're here. Bill O'Reilly is joining us in just a few minutes. I want to take your phone calls. I have a couple of things that we really, really have to get to today. That some of them are more fun. I mean, it is Friday and it is Stu's birthday. And Doc Thompson is here from the Morning Blaze.
Happy birthday!
Thank you so much.
We brought
Doc.
You a cake.
Now you did.
Now, Doc, I just have to ask you a question. And I'm just This cake is from the Cake Boss.
That's what we hear.
What do you mean that's what you hear?
That's the rumor around the office.
Well, you either know or you don't know.
There's some dispute, but I think it is.
Okay. All right. May I ask, how many birthday cakes,
right?
You know, happy birthday, Stu. How many birthday cakes say,
you're welcome,
on top of it?
That's not all, many. Not many.
So, so when it was brought in, you guys said the Morning Blaze is, which got this for you, Stu.
Yes.
But it doesn't say happy birthday, Stu. It says, you're welcome.
Right. You're welcome that we got you this cake. Because I know you're thinking, thanks for the birthday cake.
And you didn't want to take the time.
You didn't want to take the time.
We're all about economy here. Word economy. Right. Let's get it out there.
Right.
You know, get the clutter out of the way, Glenn.
Right. That's good. So you give somebody a present that just says you're welcome.
And by the way, now it's time to move that cake over to Glenn because your birthday's coming up tomorrow.
That's yes, right.
And you are welcome.
I don't want to be welcome. That's a secondhand cake. And it's a third-hand cake because it's a secondhand cake for Stu. That's the cake was not designed for him.
Yes, Jeffy was also welcome to it. Jeffy was welcome to it this morning.
No way Jeffy saw that because it has that doesn't even have, oh my gosh, it does. Look on this side.
It does have
fingerprints in it.
So it may be third hand for you and fourth hand for you. But nevertheless.
Yeah. Okay, you're welcome. Okay, thank you very much, Doc. I appreciate it. You know, what is it with you guys with food? Because you have food from really good people here all the time.
Yeah, we have our own chef, Patrick Mosier, too.
Your own chef.
Yeah. He comes in and cooks for us from time to time. He's on the show with us. It's at Food Biz Pro. So we interview him because, you know.
He's so interesting.
Well, of course. That's the reason why, you know.
Oh my gosh.
And he's willing to do that. That's it's about, business and food. And
I met some, you have some of the greatest listeners, and I met a couple that make their own coffee, and it is the greatest story I've heard in so long. I love these people.
And our listeners are great, and I think part of the reason is too because they hold us accountable. That, you know, we've kind of created that hold us accountable transparency.
So they
get it. And then they tweet with us regularly. But this is a DM and his wife. They're from Des Moines. And they were looking for some change in their life, their entrepreneurial spirit. What can we do? And every year they take a trip to Yellowstone. And they drive out to Yellowstone. And on the way back, their car breaks down. And They don't have the money and they can't get it fixed and they're stuck and they're like, this is our sign. We've got to do something different. So he goes back and he was never even that passionate about coffee, but had an interest in it and started roasting beans in hot air poppers to try to teach himself on how to do it. And developed the system, eventually got a roaster. And now they have their own line of coffees called American Pride, AmericanPrideRoasters.com. The coffee is sensational. They do a great job.
And all of the coffees are named after
founding fathers.
Founding fathers.
Yeah, or there's some others. Like, he's named some other celebrity ones. Like, there's a Bacon Blast that he named after me. I think that's Bacon Blast.
That's not your name.
No, Doc Thompson's Bacon Blast Coffee.
Okay.
My middle name's Bacon, though. That's a little little fact.
You're welcome.
Yes, you're welcome. Yes. Exactly. My parents are big fan of pork belly. But so they tell little stories of the founding fathers. There's some lesser known founding fathers.
Let me throw one to me.
Yeah, here's the Philip.
I tell you, they were here last week and they were just brewing coffee all week, and it smelled so good.
They do a really good job with the flavored stuff, because the flavored coffee that they make isn't like an overwhelming, like, syrupy, whatever flavor. It's just kind of the hint of it, whatever, because you still want coffee flavor. And done as a cold brew, it's sensational. But they're really good people. So if you go to AmericanPrideRoasters.com, you can check it out.
Listen to this. I'm pretty good with the Founding Father. We did Founding Father Fridays for how long?
Yeah.
Philip Mazzi, I think. Chocolate biscotti coffee. Lesser known founder, but very important to American history. Philip Mazzi was an Italian physician and a close personal friend of Thomas Jefferson. During the American Revolution, Mazzi operated as a secret agent, purchasing and shipping weapons to the colonial army. After the war, he traveled throughout Europe promoting Republican ideals and even wrote The History of the American Revolution. Philip Mazzi is a full city roast blend coated with chocolate biscotti flavoring.
It's an awesome coffee.
Oh, my gosh,
too.
I got that. Can I open it?
Absolutely. Smell it. You'll absolutely love it. So, he does a lot of different
things. I don't want to be a Mormon. I really don't. I mean,
you're actually losing out on this one. This is not good for you.
This is the time that you're like, God,
this isn't
coffee.
Good for you, whatever.
My faith or my coffee. Oh, I go for coffee.
My wife and I, we just had a baby a couple
Man,
weeks ago and named our son after George Wythe, one of the signers from Virginia.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's a Wytheville, Virginia, and a Wythe County or whatever. Of course, she didn't like the name, the pronunciation. George Wythe. We called him Wyeth.
That's
our son. So I need to get him to make a Wythe brand. Yeah. So then I can give it to my son.
Right.
See?
Okay, good.
Yeah. Well, you're welcome about your son.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you very much. Just hand me that cake and we're good to go.
What is the name of the...
AmericanPrideRoasters.com. AmericanPrideRoasters.
I wish you could meet these people. I wish you could meet them, because they are so sincere and so kind and gentle. My gosh,
they have several blends that are just for charity, that they give a portion to charity. They've helped some, and I'm not talking like the big known charities, like individual people that they've met that they're like, let's name this, and a percentage goes after them. Really amazing people.
Yeah, they're great people.
AmericanPrideRoasters.com.
Thank you very much, Doc. Mm-hmm. I appreciate it. Hey, by the way, Monday, let's have Sarah and Pat and Doc in with us for an hour. There's a new show starting on The Blaze. And it is a round table. It's called The News and Why It Matters. So we all talk about the one story that we think is the big story of the day.
Can I be a part of that show?
And why?
The TV show?
What a surprise you are.
Oh, that's really cool. That's fun.
And so that starts Monday at 5:30 Central, right?
5:30 Eastern?
5:30 Eastern. You don't want to miss it. It's a lot of fun.
I mean, Pat Gray is going to be on it, though?
Yeah, we kind of, that limp leg. We kind of have to.
I'm curious about the seating arrangement, but other than that, I'm in.
Yeah, you're next to him. So
that's going
to
be trouble.
Yeah. All right.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks a lot, Doc. I appreciate it.
And thanks for the you're welcome cake.
You're welcome.
Never had a you're welcome cake before. I mean, let's really try to figure this out. What the hell? What do you think that was for? Who sends I need a you're welcome cake?
I really think it's an efficiency situation. You know the person's going to say you're welcome when you give them the cake, so it's just on the cake and you don't have to bother with it.
I don't think that seems beyond the point of usual American laziness.
Laziness? Yeah. We're the people that didn't we come up with the assembly line?
Yeah, this is not efficiency.
This is laziness.
That's laziness. Look, it's a birthday cake. I knew you were going to say thank you, so you're welcome.
Right.
That way I don't have to say it.
Now, no,
because what the problem is if the recipient isn't lazy, they'll call you and say, What the hell is a you're welcome cake?
And then it takes a long time to explain it.
Right, and so nobody believes you.
And you didn't save any time.
So I'm seriously wondering who that cake was for. What would that cake be for?
You're really focused on the wrong thing. It's a red velvet cake from some famous baker. I don't care what the hell it says.
I have I've lost 15 pounds in the last, since January 1 or something. And what I found is avoiding your welcome cakes helps you lose weight. I don't know for sure. I'm just writing some of these stats down, but
do you have a theory? Because I don't
my
know
my theory
why.
Is the less you eat, the thinner you become.
I don't follow.
I know.
Can we get into the commercial break?
Listen, if you're hiring, you need great people and you need a better way to find them. Something better than posting your job online and just praying for the right people to see it. ZipRecruiter knew that there would be a smarter way, especially now with technology. So they built a platform that not only posts your job everywhere where jobs are posted, but it goes out and it searches for the right candidates for you. You don't know. The person might not be checking, you know, all of the websites. They might miss you. They might be on vacation. What ZipRecruiter does is it sends an email and sends your posting and says, have you seen this? This seems right for you. This identifies the right people with the right experience and invites them to come and apply for your job. These invitations have revolutionized the way your next hire is going to be found. In fact, 80% of employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site in the first day. ZipRecruiter. It also doesn't stop there. They even spotlight the strongest applications that you receive, so you never miss the perfect match. The right candidates are out there. They're waiting for you to reach out. ZipRecruiter does it. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses from Fortune 100 companies to businesses like yours and mine. Right now, you can post your jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/Beck. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Beck.
Glenn Beck Mercury. Glenn Beck.
I'm still so frustrated with the Libertarian Party right now because it's the biggest lost opportunity I think I've ever seen. I don't understand what they're doing. You know, the last time they ran people who were not libertarian. They just were not libertarian. They were for bigger government. They were for, you know, for instance, they were for telling people, religious people, exactly what to do. Well, if I don't want religious people telling people what to do, and I don't want non-religious people telling what religious people should do. I don't leave each other alone. Leave each other alone. But there is something to be said for nature's laws. I believe nature's God, but if you're an atheist, just nature's laws. There are a set of principles, and they are outlined in our Declaration of Independence, and they are outlined in our Constitution. Now, if you are so far over the edge that you think the Constitution is, you know, is worthless, well, then what are you doing? Because, you know, it's like Lenin said in Revolution, you know, if you're holding up, I can't remember the exact line, but if you're holding up signs with Mao, we're going to change your head. I mean, you're fighting a losing battle. The American people are not there. The American people are starving for common sense. They're starving for limited government that makes sense. They're starving for the libertarian principles. And libertarians have to decide, am I a science experiment? Am I just a book that makes people think deeply and think different thoughts? Or do you actually want to help? Do you actually want to apply reasonable principles and lead this country out of darkness? When you say, well, we're libertarians, so, you know, anything goes, anybody wants to speak, and you allow somebody to come up and strip on stage, you are no longer talking about applied politics.
It's a party.
Yeah, literally.
It's a fun weekend.
It's a fun weekend.
That happened at their convention, by the way.
Correct. This latest is they've got a guy on the committee that is saying that, you know, adults should be able to have sex with a 14-year-old. Well, you know what? You can have that debate at your parties, but you're not going to get the American people to go there. And are you really seriously willing to stand up when the country, when we're about to lose all of it, and you're going to stand by a guy who says an adult should have sex with a child? You can have that debate all you want, but it has no place in today's politics. The house is on fire. What do you say? You grab a hose. I'm just so frustrated because people want a change. And if there was a principled party that said, look, we're going to take atheists and we're going to take Christians and we're going to take Muslims and we're going to take Jews, but the ones that all agree the government has no role whatsoever in establishing which one of you guys is right, people would go. They would flock. If you had a government, if you had a party that said, hey, spending is out of control and we have to start reeling it back in, and it is going to mean cuts, but we're not going to do all of it at once. We're just going to reverse thrusters for a while and take it piece by piece. Somebody who is would say, look, I'm against the drug war. I am against drug laws because they don't work. It's like prohibition. I am for the legalization of almost every drug, if not every drug, but not today. You cannot reverse this and just pull these laws out when you have a nation that has been trained to have their hands out, has been trained that daddy will always take care of you. You have to slowly reverse it and teach people how to stand on their own two feet. But by having stupid arguments about hookers, heroin, and 14-year-olds having sex with adults, you have no place in American politics right now.
You don't want to become the Jared Fogle party. That's not a good position.
Oh my gosh!
You know, for a political party, it's
frustrating because they have it.
I mean, they don't have it though. They don't. I love the libertarian principles. I'm with you, but the party does not have it in that way. They you know, again, here's a guy who is seemingly a serious candidate that decides to align himself, which is a risk with the Libertarian Party at this point. And this controversy happens where someone's saying, well, basically there should be no laws. Government should have no role in sex whatsoever was the summary of his position. We keep saying the 14-year-old because that was the hypothetical. But his summary was no government has no role in sex whatsoever. So, you know, that I think it goes further than that. And then what happens? The candidate with credibility has to leave. And the guy who's like, sex with 14-year-olds and below, he stays.
You know,
you're never gonna. I mean,
and then to call our military killers,
right? That's ridiculous.
I mean, that's not where the American people are. We want an end to these wars. We want our people to come home. We want a welcome home parade that the people pay for if they want it,
Glenn,
not the government.
Beck, Mercury.
They're not.
Love, courage, truth. Glenn Beck.
Let me talk to you about the stock market yesterday. Stock market was pretty ugly. After 9 years of market growth, the smooth sailing is finally getting a little choppy.
What?
Yesterday, the Dow Jones Industrial Average dropped another 1,032 points. Second day this week that the Dow has lost over 1,000 points. Monday's loss was the largest single day drop on record. okay, well, the stock market is really super high. Yesterday was the second largest. The next two biggest single day point drops in record happened in 2008. So the Dow has now dropped into what is called correction territory, which means it's down 10% from the highest point of over 26,000 on January 26th. The Dow hasn't been in a correction since February of 2016. Corrections happen. I'd love to have, a correction not so dramatic. You know, I'd love it to actually be rooted in something reasonable. But we haven't had that for a few years. It would have to drop another 10% now to be considered a bear market. When the market is in correction, it usually indicates that investors are turning pessimistic about the markets. However, a correction doesn't mean that the market is unraveling. Since 1998, there have been 10 corrections, including yesterday's. Only two of those corrections continued into a decline into a bear market. Now, everybody is scrambling for an explanation of this week's shaky market. No one knows whether this volatility will last days, weeks, months. Are we headed for the Great Depression? Maybe. Maybe not. Doubtful. I don't think so. Investors seem to be nervous about inflation. That's logical. They are nervous that the Federal Reserve is going to raise interest rates faster than originally thought. I believe that to be true. Fear about inflation is driven by good things, an increase in wages, which are now rising at the fastest rate since 2009. So while the market is acting weird this week, it seems to be, you know, more out of place than usual, but that's because good things are actually happening. The country is moving forward. The tax cuts have actually made hiring possible and higher wages. And also, the Dow has risen to unprecedented levels in the last year. So we're not used to volatility. Any shakiness seems, oh my gosh, what's happening? This didn't happen under Obama. Yeah, because it was all bogus. Many analysts think this volatility is long overdue. So do I. Nothing more than a healthy correction. If nothing else, this week has been an interesting test in the psychology of investors. The market has been doing so well for so long that when there is a normal correction, everybody panics. Relax. We're okay.
It's Friday, February 9th. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
How bizarre is it to hear the monologue from me saying that about the stock market and the economy? I just don't think this is the big one. I think, you know, we added $2 trillion in debt just last night. $2 trillion. To put that into perspective, if I take every single dollar and pound and yak from every country on earth, every bit of currency, and I take it all, that's only about $50 trillion. We're halfway to all of the money in the world in debt. That is going to cost us one of these days, very soon. I just don't think it's today. Welcome to Bill O'Reilly from BillO'Reilly.com. Hello, Bill. How are you?
Lou Dobbs, how you doing today?
Very good. Any comment on this,
wow,
Bill?
I mean, first of all, you told me to relax, so I am very relaxed.
All right, good.
I'm doing a little yoga here as I'm talking.
Are you wearing
to you.
The yoga? Are you wearing the yoga outfit?
No, I don't have the yoga serape. I'm not.
You're just in your suit.
Know. Yeah, I'm in my suit. How did you know that, Beck?
Well, I wanted to know. I mean, we do get mail. Do you sleep in your suit? Because I think those.
You know, no, I don't. I have jammies that look like
a
suit.
Okay, good, yeah. Good. All right.
Tie pasted right on them.
Sure, okay. All right. Yeah. All right, so any comment on that, Bill, before we move on?
You know, I think, look, the only comment, because the stock market is gambling. I mean, it is.
Yes.
Let's face it. Let's be honest. And I say in my tip of the day, which I give every day on my tweet, Beck,
yes,
at Bill O'Reilly.
May I guess what it was?
Go ahead.
If you can afford it, tip 20% in restaurants. Used to be 15, but
Beck.
Come on, brother.
How flattering.
Yeah.
Anyway, I said that the older you get, the less stock you should have or hold. So I'm down in my portfolio 25% in stock. Because it's not worth the risk if, when you can get, you know, bonds that will pay you, you know, not spectacular returns, but steady, and they're not going to go out of business. You're right, the debt is going to come back to haunt us at some point. So you don't want to be the Vegas person when you're 70 years old. I mean, that's insane. So conservative investing is my advice to Americans over the age of 50. If you're a kid and you've got a good job, you can go into the mutual funds and all that, because it probably will pay off for you.
Let me ask you this, Bill. Are you concerned at all? One of the things they're not talking about this is we had another auction of bonds, which means we were out selling the debt of the government, trying to raise money. And it was, and the yield went through the roof because demand was very low. Everybody's like, yeah, I don't think I'm going to bid on those. I'm not interested.
Right. They got to pay more interest.
Yeah. Does that,
well, that's a good thing for investors, certainly.
Yeah. But a bad thing for the United States of America.
Yeah. But it's, look, you've got to look at it this way. It might be a bad thing for the USA in February. But in May, the whole picture could be turned around. So I think that we're the most stable economy on the face of the earth. Maybe Switzerland would outflank us there, but it's certainly one of the top three. And, it, you know, the Chinese, for example, you're not going to, I don't invest in the China stock market. I mean, that's crazy. Yeah. And those people over there, the Chinese who have money, they're punting in here. And I don't see that changing. I mean, are you going to go to the euro? Are you going to go into Angela Merkel territory? Are you going to give your money to Russians? No. So I think that the United States will stay as the place where worldwide investment is mostly made. Could be, I could be wrong, but I think the facts are on my side.
All right, so let's shift gears to what happened in the Senate yesterday. The continuing resolutions, that's not a budget process. And and really, we are in a dictatorship. We've been worried about, you know, Obama being a dictator or Trump being a dictator. No, the real dictatorship here is Chuck Schumer and Mitch McConnell saying, here's the budget. Everybody, every one of the people's representatives, you either vote for all of it or you are responsible for shutting the government down. That's not a budget process.
I don't even cover this on BillO'Reilly.com. I don't even cover it because it's such a charade, and the conclusion is foregone, Beck. You're absolutely right. These pinheads on Capitol Hill, they don't care about the debt, and they just want to keep the circus on the road. And so they're going to pass these spending bills. Trump's big thing is the military, so he's pumping more billions of dollars there. And that's not going to change until there's a catastrophe. And there will be, but I think that catastrophe is down the road a piece.
Let me move to the FBI and the text.
I'm really angry about it, Beck. Two things I want to talk to you today about.
Okay.
All right. The border wall and the FBI. Go.
You said you wanted to talk about, so I should say,
no, I know,
hey, Bill, let's talk about the two things, the border wall, but let's start with the FBI. Go.
All right. The FBI. Look, it's clear there are four people that may be indicted. All right. James Comey, the former head. His deputy.
Can you explain from your point of view, when you name these guys, for your point of view, what you think they're going to be indicted for, what they did?
Okay. So Comey went in to a judge, a federal judge, who's on the FISA court, which is the court that issues warrants for tapping.
Yeah, secret
to protect
warrants.
All Americans from terrorism.
Yeah.
That's why the court exists. Okay,
yep.
From foreign threats.
Right.
And Comey went in and he put his name on documents that said, you got to give us this warrant so we can spy on Carter Page, who's associated with the Trump campaign, because Carter Page is a stooge for Putin. So we need to follow him around. We need to see all his internet stuff and listen to him on the phone. Okay, the judge says, well, give me some evidence. And, oh, here's the dossier that we somehow have acquired, the FBI. Dossier's phony. Everybody knows it's phony. Comey knew it was phony. Comey submitted a phony dossier to the judge to get the tap. It's a crime.
Okay, next.
What's your next question?
Well, who else is going to be indicted and why?
Well, McCabe did the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's Comey and McCabe.
Okay.
All right?
Mm-hmm.
So those two guys went to a federal judge under false pretenses to get a tap on an American citizen. I like to dumb it down, keep it simple,
yep,
so even
yep,
I can
yep.
understand it.
Right.
All right? The other two are Peter Strzok and Lisa Page. Now, Peter Strzok was the lead investigator on the Hillary Clinton email thing. And then Mueller, Robert Mueller, special counsel, hired him to look into the Russian collusion thing. All right, his girlfriend in the FBI was Lisa Page. Both were married, and they're having a little thing going on. All right, 50,000 texts between the two of them. In the body of the texts are all kinds of stuff, attacking Donald Trump and a lot of other people. All right, and then there are little furtive things, like POTUS, President of the United States, Barack Obama at the time. He wants to be apprised of everything we're doing, even though Barack Obama said he was staying completely out of it. Okay, so all of that. But the big thing about Strzok and Page is that from their correspondence, it looks like they weren't conducting, Strzok was not conducting an honest investigation, at least into the Hillary Clinton email thing. And then we find out that McCabe knew that Anthony Weiner's computer contained classified information that came from Hillary Clinton. A month before, he told Congress, 4 weeks. And he told Congress just before the election took place, a couple of days before. If he had said that a month before, Hillary Clinton would have been damaged almost. She might have even had to leave the race. That's how serious that was. So it looks like, circumstantial but certainly worth investigating, that McCabe held back that information for a month to help Hillary Clinton.
All right. When we come back, I want to talk to you about a few of these things and delve a little bit deeper into them in just a minute with Bill O'Reilly from BillO'Reilly.com. All right. Our sponsor this half hour is ZipRecruiter. If you are hiring, you need great people. And there's a better way to find them, something better than posting your job online and just praying for the right people to actually see it, because they may miss it. Even though ZipRecruiter will post on 100+ job sites, so all of the biggest job sites, you put your job posting out with one click. It goes out to all of the big ones, and then most people would just wait. But ZipRecruiter goes the extra mile. They send invitations out. And what they are is they go out and they look for qualified candidates that are looking for a job like yours. And they say, hey, by the way, have you seen this one? You should apply. When they apply, ZipRecruiter goes another step and they highlight the best candidates in the category. So when they're coming in, they say, by the way, these three are really, really qualified for exactly what you're looking for. This is the way ZipRecruiter can help you and your business now. Been used by businesses in Fortune 100 companies to companies the size of yours or mine. Right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. Post your jobs at ZipRecruiter for free by going to ZipRecruiter.com/Beck. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Beck.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Glenn Beck.
We're with Bill O'Reilly from BillO'Reilly.com. His latest book is Killing England, and it's available everywhere.
Bill, I have a fundamental question about the FBI thing, and I can't get past it. We know there are a lot of things that were shady with some of these agents, some of the people that did not like Donald Trump. And you're right, completely worth investigating, and we should look into it. But it seems like the way that at least the conservative media or the Trump-defending media is talking about this issue, it's as if the FBI had it out for Trump from the beginning. They wanted him to be, they did not want him to be president, and they don't want him to be president now, and they're doing everything they can in this sort of deep state thing to undermine his presidency. I understand the premise, I understand that storyline, but when you're designing a plan to take down Donald Trump at all costs, shouldn't you leave out the part where you release a letter saying his opponent is under FBI investigation 10 days before the election? It just does not work for me because every one of these things, and it all comes down to the fact that it without that letter, likely Donald Trump would not be president.
Well, I think Mueller handed the election to Donald Trump.
Comey.
He had to.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
What you guys are missing is what we just talked about before the break. Comey had to because he had the information about Wiener's computer 4 weeks before that, and they kept it quiet as long as they could. But Comey's saying to himself, if I don't put this out before the election, and then it's found that we had it, I'm going to get indicted on the spot. So he had to.
But he could have done it. CYA delayed
as long as they could.
Right, but you're
and then they came forward.
But the case is everybody else didn't do. I mean, they were covering for her. They were delaying. They've covered all of this evidence, and yet on this one thing, Comey said, "I have to release this."
Yeah, because it was so big. When you have,
but it turned out to be nothing.
I know it did, but it was Anthony Weiner. Okay, that if it had been anybody else, maybe they could have gotten away with it, but not somebody that high profile. So they had to CYA. These guys, look, they're professional CYA people, and they're not going to put themselves at personal risk. So they basically timed it. They said, okay, we'll delay it as much as we can, and then we'll put it out, and then we'll say, hey, there was nothing there. But, so nobody can come and say we tried to boot the election. I'm not saying that I'm convicting James Comey of anything. I'm saying there's more than enough evidence to have a special prosecutor appointed because the FBI can investigate.
That I agree with.
All right. But it is also beyond any reasonable doubt that Peter Strzok, a high-ranking FBI guy who actually wrote the words that Comey read about Hillary Clinton's email in July, hated Trump and wanted Trump to lose. There's no doubt about it from his own emails.
So, I mean, that's definitely
true. More than enough to go in and shake this whole thing up.
Right. So do you think there's enough of a problem on both sides that we're not that we're looking at a situation like we had with what's his name stuffing the things in his underpants,
Sandy Berger,
where both sides are kind of like, you know, let's just Sandy, you know, Sandy, I don't know exactly what he was doing.
You can do that now. It's just too high profile with Congress all over it, you know. And the Inspector General's report is really going to blow it up. So in March, the Inspector General of the Justice Department is going to issue a report on how the FBI conducted itself looking at the Hillary Clinton emails. And you got to figure that's going to bleed over to Russia collusion. And this guy, Michael Horowitz, I think his name is an honest guy. And I think he's going to drop a megaton bomb. And the reason I think that is because they fired McCabe. 10 days ago, he left the building. Oh, well, I'm going to retire. No. They ushered him out because the FBI, the new FBI chiefs, I think, got a heads up on the Inspector General's report that's going to be damning against McCabe and Comey.
Are we going
That's where the evidence points. Remember, I'm an evidence-based guy.
Right. So
I don't do the speculation thing.
Well, then that's not helpful to have you on.
Dark radio.
Yeah, I mean, it's speculation here. You got to help me out a little bit.
But this is the line, I think, Bill, is in that there's enough here to say, I want to know what actually happened and who did what. So your point here of saying there should be an investigation and we should look into that, I think, is a completely fair one. I feel like the way it's talked about a lot in the media is this is decided, this happened, and I think we need to be careful with that.
Yeah, on both sides. Back in just a second, more with Bill O'Reilly.
Glenn Beck, Mercury.
Trust is an important thing. It's something that we do a lot more as human beings than I think most people realize. I mean, you drive down the road and there's a little yellow line between a car coming at you at 50 miles an hour and you're on your side of the road and they're on their side of the road, and we just trust that they'll stay on their side of the road. Their self-interest will do it, whatever it is. We don't die most of the time when we're driving, and this is a positive thing. It's hard, though, to find people you can trust when it comes to really complicated transactions like real estate. I mean, what do you do? You know, you're talking about your biggest investment in your entire life, and you're trusting this to someone because you don't understand what any of those forms mean. I never do. No one does. You don't even, half the people don't even read them. You need someone who can walk you through a big transaction like buying or selling a home and make sure they're people that you can trust, that have been screened, that aren't just some random person you're looking up in the phone book. RealEstateAgentsITrust.com is a company that Glenn actually started because he was trying to sell his house and had some issues. And basically what they do at RealEstateAgentsITrust.com, it's a network of 1,200 agents. And Glenn and his team have gone through and found the best ones in each area. And you go and you put in your address and you put in your area where you are and you find an agent you can trust. It's your biggest investment. You need to take it seriously. Go to RealEstateAgentsITrust.com. It's RealEstateAgentsITrust.com. Give it a shot. RealEstateAgentsITrust.com.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
We're with Bill O'Reilly, and I want to talk a little bit about Rob Porter. He works at the White House. He's White House Staff Secretary. He handles all of the papers to the president. There is a big scandal now because apparently he was accused by both of his ex-wives of physical and mental abuse. He had a restraining order on him with his second wife. None of this apparently was known. When it was found out, the White House didn't move immediately. They did put him on a, didn't they put him on a list and said, if anybody has these accusations, they've got to go. However, Kelly did not execute that in the 2 weeks in between writing and doing. Is that correct, Stu?
He did not get the permanent security clearance. Right. And there was several aides apparently that were ruled to not, they were not going to be able to get that. They have a temporary security clearance. And apparently, according to reports today, Kelly had said, if someone can't get the permanent security clearance, we're going to let them go. He had not executed that idea yet.
Right.
That was, he was going to do it apparently anyway. Whether he thought he could reverse the decision in some way, we don't know.
So, Bill, what are your thoughts? What are your thoughts on Rob Porter?
You know, I don't have any thoughts on him because I don't know what happened. I'm not privy to any of it. I don't trust the press to report accurately on anything in the Trump administration. But it seems strange to me that the FBI, again, we come back to the FBI, it's their job. See, they, in order to get clearance to work in these jobs at the White House, you have to go through a big FBI check.
Unless you're Van Jones.
And so that they basically are responsible for saying, you know, you can't bring the guy in because he's got A, B, C, D, and E on his sheet, which we verified. So it's hard, you know, and I want to caution, that's the best word, everybody, all Americans. What you hear reported on the news and reading the newspaper, right now, it's a 50-50 proposition. Half of it is not true. Half of it's garbage. So you have to go back to the fundamental system. And the FBI is the agency that oversees all security clearances. And, you know, I don't know whether the Trump administration defied the FBI's advice. I mean, we're not privy. We don't have that information.
Glenn, what did you, because he, you know, he came from Orrin Hatch's office, Porter, and he's Mormon.
I didn't know that.
Would there be, because this is now being, you know, it's being part of his bio now, that's being sort of promoted. Would there be any record of, like,
yes,
with the church?
Has he been excommunicated? If somebody was accused of a spousal abuse, the church, our church is very different, and it does not get involved in, you know, your life in those ways unless abuse, mental or physical abuse or something like that, and we have a church council. If he was a member in good standing, they would have brought a council together, and they would have listened to his wife, and they would have listened to him on the spiritual matter. Is this happening? Are you using unrighteous dominion? If he was abusing his wife or accused of it, there should have been a council called privately, and if he was found guilty of that two times, I can't imagine if he's a Mormon in good standard and good standing that it wouldn't have been called. They would have excommunicated him. So the question is he a Mormon in good standing? What did the council, was it called? And if so, was he excommunicated? If he was called, they did have hearings on it, and he was not excommunicated. I would believe that maybe that's not the situation, but I don't know. I don't know.
Is that public, all that stuff? I mean, does anybody know what happened?
I think no. You don't. None of the hearing is public. It's between husband and wife and the council, and that's all secret. Uh-huh. But you would know if he was excommunicated. That would be public.
That has not come out.
I haven't seen that. No, I have not seen that. So if you're Orrin Hatch and you heard those things, I don't know if Orrin did, but if you heard those things and he went through the church, I mean, the church does not take that lightly. And if you would have gone through that deal, and excommunication means you're done, you have to start from scratch and repair this. It's a big deal. For a Mormon, that's a very big deal. Bill, let's talk. Yeah. Let's talk a little bit. I have so many things in front of me here to talk to you about.
Give me a shot on the wall, Beck.
I was going to say, let's talk about the wall and the border guard's death.
Okay, I don't know anything about the border guard's death. A man must know his limitations, and I do.
Okay,
the wall is coming. All right, and then the Glenn Beck program is now out front. This is the next big thing, because Trump is not going to give in to the Dreamers unless he gets funding for the wall. Very simple issue. So my question to everybody in America is this. Why would you oppose building a wall on the southern border? And then you'll get the usual, well, it's an insult to Mexico. It's racist. All right, that's what you get. All right, that's the only argument. So then you say, do you know that in Mexico in 2017, there were more than 25,000 homicides and another 30,000 people unaccounted for? They vanished. They don't know where they are, you know, whatever. I put the number at 50,000 homicides. That's way more than in Afghanistan or Iraq or anywhere else in the world, okay? That you have this out-of-control cartel situation where the drug gangsters are killing people every single day at a level that's so horrifying, but the world doesn't care.
When I was at CNN, I had photographic evidence that they would not allow me to show on air of a bowling alley on our border on the Mexican side where the drug cartels beheaded all of the people that were ratting on them and trying to stop them. They went into a bowling alley and rolled the heads down the bowling alley towards the pins. I had photographs of it. CNN would not let me show them.
There you go. So what you have here is you have a government in Mexico City under President Nieto that cannot control the country. And that's beyond any reasonable doubt. You can't debate it. All right. So the drug cartels control much of Mexico. So therefore, thousands of tons of narcotics come into the United States because that's how the drug cartels make their money. And violence comes into the United States because the drug cartel members don't just stay in Mexico. They come here as well to oversee their business. So the wall is designed to keep some of that out in addition to the people smuggling. We know millions of people have come here illegally through the southern border. Every day we get reports about criminals who have been deported 10 times, yet they come back 11 times. So, you still oppose the wall? Is there an American who still opposes the wall? Here's the crusher. In Israel, they put up a wall, Beck. What happened? What happened after they put up the wall?
The violence went down.
Not just went down, almost non-existent. So that terrorists were infiltrating into Israel. They were killing Israeli citizens at a horrifying rate. Israel built the wall, and that stopped. And you're telling me we shouldn't have a wall on the southern border? See, this, you have to make your argument so overwhelming. And even the argument that I'm making, I'm a racist. I mean, Jorge Ramos, if you got him on the show and said, listen to O'Reilly's analysis, I didn't know, he's a racist. He's a racist. You know, it's such crap and such a fraud. And I'm not doing this to defend Donald Trump. If I were in the White House, I'd make the argument, as I just made on your program, to the American people in a press conference. And I destroy the opposition and say, if it is irresponsible not to build the wall. If I don't build a wall, I'm putting you in danger, Indianapolis Colt linebacker, mm-hmm. Kate Steinle. Mm-hmm. Okay? Bill. So I've got to do everything as president to protect you. Therefore, I need funding for the wall. And if I get it, then we're going to do a quasi-amnesty on these Dreamer people so that everybody's happy. All right? So are you telling me that this is illogical? I mean, I get so angry because the press in the United States is so corrupt. I mean, it's almost as corrupt as the cartels.
So
I think we have a media cartel here.
So who wins in this debate? Because I really, truly believe most Americans are like, stop it. Stop it. We need security on the border. And the people who came here as children because of their parents or they were born here, they're here now. We're not going to deport all of them. We have to watch the border, make sure it's secure, and then also let's just figure out the deal with the Dreamers and
yeah,
I'll give you that, you give
people.
Me this.
Sure.
That's what people want. Who wins?
I will tell you, if our presentation, our conversation right now, were presented to the American public, 80% of the American public go, yeah, Beck O'Reilly and Stu would actually get some props even though he hasn't said anything. They're right, okay? 80% I put the number at.
So who wins in this fight?
I think Trump has to win because he holds the power. I mean, he'll veto any kind of Dreamer legislation unless it includes funding for the wall.
But they won't. They don't want the Dreamers to. They do not want Donald Trump to give amnesty and a road to citizenship to 2.5 times more people than Barack Obama was suggesting. They do not want it.
Who is they?
The Democratic Party. They don't want it.
Well, I mean, look, their nefarious motives will easily be exposed if they don't cooperate on this. But you can just hammer that party, and they need to win the House in November by saying, are you kidding me? You oppose building a wall and all the facts that you present about how out of control Mexico is and the narcotics and the opiates and the drug and all, and you oppose it? And we can show you that in Israel it worked? And you still oppose it? You could kill him on that because it's not that complicated an issue.
Bill, you have an insight into Donald Trump that we don't have. I mean, you've known him for decades. So is it consistent with the guy that you've known all this time for him to kind of run as a real border hawk, but when he's in office to be the kind of guy who's going to say, we want the security, I'll give you the DACA, I'll give you the amnesty on these people and sort of make that deal? Is that him?
Is a deal maker.
Yeah, but he has to do the wall because that was his signature issue, and he knows it. That would be like Bush the Elder going, read my lips, no new taxes, and then raising taxes. So he has to do it. You know, Trump is smart enough to know that there are a few core things that he cannot compromise on. He has to do, and the wall is one of them.
Does the wall, Bill, give him essentially amnesty on all of the other pledges on the border?
A lot of them.
Yeah.
A lot of them, because that was, you know, he pledged to cut taxes. He's done it. And now if he can get the wall under construction, you know, those are the two big ones. And he can skate on a lot of the lesser stuff.
Yeah. Bill O'Reilly from BillO'Reilly.com. Thank you, sir. Have a good weekend.
You too. Thanks for having me in, guys. I enjoy it. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye bye. BillO'Reilly.com. You can watch his show every day online. BillO'Reilly.com. Let me tell you about hiring the right people. ZipRecruiter, a better way to hire great people. We want to thank them for sponsoring this hour and making this hour possible. ZipRecruiter not only post your job online and then pray that the right people see it, but ZipRecruiter knew that there was a smarter way, so they built a platform that finds the right job candidates for you. This is, you know, really, this is the beginning of AI. This is the way it's going to work. I mean, we used to have to sort through everything with phone calls and resumes. Then we could post our job online and resumes would come in and we didn't have to, you know, make phone calls and take all of the meetings. We could just look at all of the resumes that were coming in electronically. Now, ZipRecruiter is taking this a step further. They know that you can do that. I mean, okay. Can AI, can a system, an algorithm go out and look for the candidates, specifically the right ones for you, find them, and then say, hey, you have to apply for this job? That's exactly what they do. And the answer is yes, you can do it, and it works really well. 80% of people who try ZipRecruiter and post their job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through their site in the very first day. ZipRecruiter. They also spotlight the strongest applications that you receive so you don't miss the perfect match. ZipRecruiter.com. Try it for free now at ZipRecruiter.com/Beck. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Beck.
Glenn Beck Mercury. Glenn Beck.
Thanks so much for tuning in today. You see this, Stu, you want to talk about, I'm going to bring these jobs back from China and why that's a lie. And anyone, any politician, left or right, who says we're losing jobs to China, I want you to listen to this story. Foxconn. You know what Foxconn is, right?
Yeah, they're the big sort of manufacturer of a lot of iPhones and you know, they're famous for having tough conditions in China.
suicides
at their factories.
Factories are like slave camps. Your iPhone, I think, it's being built by a slave. And what they do is you get a, congratulations, you're out of the rice paddy. You can come in and get a job at Foxconn. But you have to live where you work in these horrible conditions. You eat where you work. You never leave. People, they've had to put fencing all around the top of the roof because people keep throwing themselves off the roof. I mean, it's horrible. Foxconn is planning to slash more than 10,000 jobs as a part of the company's aggressive efforts to increase the use of automation. When China is automating and getting rid of human laborers, something that is cheap and meaningless to them, you can guarantee that those kinds of jobs are not coming back to America. Back in just a second.
Glenn Beck Mercury. Love, courage, truth. Glenn Beck.
Can a coin be racist? Let me rephrase that. Of course a coin can be racist. We all know that. Let me be more specific. Can the game heads or tails be racist? Apparently so. Two athletes nominated by the United States Olympic team to be the flag bearer at the opening ceremony. Shawnee Davis, an African-American male, five-time Olympian, and Erin Hamlin, a white female, four-time Olympian, were tied for the position. Both received the exact same number of votes from the representatives. So how do you handle a tie like this in the most pragmatic and objective way possible? Heads or tails. It's how we start games, football games. It's how we make decisions where it's a tie. You know, draw a straw, flip a coin. Well, Erin Hamlin won, and Shawnee Davis played the race card. He tweeted, Team USA dishonorably tossed a coin to decide its 2018 flag bearer. No problem. I can wait until 2022. Hashtag Black History Month 2018. Excuse me? I mean, how can you possibly think a coin toss was racially motivated? What's the answer here? Should the team given Davis the position just because he's black? No, of course not. They shouldn't give it to Aaron just because she's white and a female. No. Should we start banning coin tosses? Do we have to declare that the game heads and tails is now somehow or another racist and biased if the black person doesn't win? This is ridiculous. This is the most non-biased and objective way you pick something. Davis is obviously still upset about not being the flag bearer because he skipped the opening ceremony this morning. Well, isn't that the spirit of an American Olympian? I'm a sore loser. I'm going to take my toys and go home. Well, quite frankly, anybody who behaves that way, white, black, yellow, polka dot, plaid, it doesn't matter. I'm glad you don't represent us at the Olympics today. Bad attitudes are something even four shiny Olympic medals just can't hide.
It's Friday, February 9th. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
I have waited all week to do the monologue that I am not a good enough man to do. Tomorrow, I am flying out to attend one of the greatest men I've ever known. I'm going to attend his funeral. His name is John Huntsman Sr. He's the guy who was responsible for the first, you know, KTEL Records presents the best of. He's the first guy to put a compilation album together. And he did it because he needed to raise money to make a mold so he could make styrofoam boxes. Because nobody had ever thought of, gee, I wonder if it would be better to have styrofoam and put your Big Mac in a styrofoam. He needed to make the molds, but he didn't have the money. So he came up with another idea. Why don't I do a compilation album of everybody's favorite songs? I first walked into his office. Here's this industrialist with gold records on his wall. And I'm like, John, what the hell is that? That was creative thinking. John Huntsman was by my side quietly during some of the most difficult days of my life. He taught me how to fly fish. He taught me how to be a better man. He taught me that you can shoot straight. You can tell the truth. You can do business with a handshake, and you still can succeed. He's a guy who worked in Washington, worked for Nixon, one of the only guys they'd ever questioned in the Nixon administration because everyone knew John Huntsman wouldn't be a part of any of this. A guy who stood up at that time and said, "Excuse me, I want no part of this." He taught me what a game Washington really is. He taught me how to pray. He taught me how to give blessings to others. One day late at night, we were both vacationing, and I was about three houses down from his. And he was over at the house, and he was probably 70-something at the time. And it was dark, and I said, John, let me walk you home. So we walked home, and we talked, and we had such a great conversation that when we got to his door, he said, let's walk back to your house. So we walked back to my house and then back to his. And in one of those trips, he just stopped and looked up at the star, and he said, can you read the stars? I said, no, no. And he started to point out all the constellations and name all the stars. He was a navigator in World War II. And he said, every man needs to be able to read the stars. Every man needs to know the right direction and how to find the right direction. He told me as I was just beginning the success of my career, he asked me, Glenn, how much is enough? Here's a guy who had been on the richest men in the world list for decades. I said, what do you mean? He said, you have to set a number, you have to set a goal, and then live by that. He said, how much is enough? Decide, or it will never be enough. He taught me what it was like to love and lose a daughter with grace and compassion and dignity. He taught me how to be a father by watching him with his children. How to deal with even the most challenging things where a dad and mom don't have an answer by watching him love his son, Marky. I learned how to serve in a church calling with everything you have. One day we were out fly fishing, and I asked him for a blessing. I wasn't feeling well, and I said, John, do you mind giving me a blessing? And he said, sure. Could you excuse me for just a second? I said, sure. He went inside to the house, and he changed into a suit and put on a tie and a white shirt. And I said, where are you going? What are you doing? And he said, I just feel as though if I'm going to try to speak the words of the Lord, I just feel I should be dressed appropriately. He gave me a 5-minute blessing, walked back in, and changed back into his fly fishing clothes. I learned how to be gracious, even when you don't want to be, from him. And how to forgive those people that you really don't want to forgive. He taught me through his own marriage of how to marry way over your head. I'm not sure I brought anything to the table for him. And I'm not foolish enough to think that he felt the same way about me. But he was there at the worst time with my father, who we were estranged at the end. We didn't even have a funeral for my dad. And I looked at John, as a father figure, I think much to his chagrin, I've met a lot of great people in my life. I've met prime ministers, and I have met kings and presidents. But there is one man who impacted my life for the better, like no one else. Heads and shoulders. I regret not saying that to him. The first time I met him was at his cancer center, the Huntsman Cancer Center in Salt Lake City. A friend said, "You have to have lunch with a friend of mine." He said, "Do you know John Huntsman Sr.?" And I said, "No, I know he's a billionaire." And I wondered what it would be like to have lunch with a billionaire. And I quickly found out as I pulled my car up to the Huntsman Cancer Institute, and he said, "Come on in." And we went into his cafeteria, a hospital cafeteria, and we had lunch. And we talked about how to be charitable, how to give. In 2008, after the crash, he actually put his house and his plane and his car as collateral, not for his company, as collateral for the charitable obligations that he had made. He asked me if I would help them cure cancer. He was convinced that it's just around the corner, and he has convinced me. I remember standing in the hospital at an elevator door, and I said, "John, I'll make you a deal. I will help you if you teach me how to be a charitable man." He shook my hand and said, "That's a deal I'll make. The first lesson is you can't just care about cancer. You have to care about the entire human condition." It's why he's built homeless shelters and battered women's shelters. His charitable giving is beyond imagination. John Huntsman Sr. kept his promise to me. And tomorrow, I'm going to his funeral and his burial and let him know that my commitment back to him to honor that agreement is being renewed. And I have quite a few years ahead of me to care about the entire human condition. As he would say, "Goodbye, my dear and sweet, sweet friend."
Glenn Beck.
Thank you for putting up with me. I appreciate it. Hey, I want to tell you about our sponsor this half hour. We're really grateful to have them. It's 1-800-FLOWERS. Valentine's Day is just a few days away. And if you happen to be watching us on TV, you can see the roses that were sent in a few days ago. They're just starting to bloom. It's really, really... I hate roses when they They just start to blue. You know, they you get them, you put them in water, and then the head drops down and all the petals fall off. 1-800-Flowers.com. They cut them at their peak, and then they ship them overnight. So you get absolutely the freshest flowers that you can. And right now, you can get 18 red roses for only $29.99, or you can upgrade to 24 for only $10 more. This is a great offer you're not going to find elsewhere. It's at 1-800-Flowers.com. Use the promo code BECK. 18 red roses for $29.99, $10 more, you get 24. It is only at 1-800-Flowers.com, 1-800-Flowers.com. Make sure you use the promo code BECK. I have three copies. These are copies that John Huntsman gave to me. One of the last times I saw him, of his book, Barefoot to Billionaire. And they are all signed by John. And I would ask if, you know, only if you're an entrepreneur, you really, truly believe in the American dream and you will read the book, not just keep it on the shelf, but you really will read the book. I'll ask my producers to take some calls and they can give out three books. I don't want to make it a contest, but you know, they can decide who gets the books at 888-727-BECK. Barefoot to Billionaire. The incredible story of a guy who grew up in a home literally with cardboard walls on an Indian reservation because his father was a teacher or a doctor, I think a teacher, on an Indian reservation. And they grew up dirt poor, that really one room, and they put cardboard up to wall off rooms. He didn't have shoes. And he lived his life as one of the greatest industrialists of our age, and truly one of the unsung philanthropists, one of the greatest philanthropists that have lived in the last 50 years. And nobody really knows. I have stories that I will write down that I know of this man. But it's not my place to tell, but I will write them down, and someday, hopefully they will be published after my death, on just the stories that I know about him that nobody else knows, about just his kindness and graciousness and his commitment to doing the right thing in charity.
We live in such a world where people who have a lot, who've, you know, earned a lot of money, are vilified. And he really disproves that theory.
Completely. All right, back with some things that we need to talk about in news and some laughs when we come back.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Well, hello to my good friend, Mr. Pat Gray. Pat, it is, of course, Stu's birthday today.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Happy birthday,
yeah.
Stu.
Yeah, did you have bring what did you bring? It's, the cake?
It's on its way. It's in the mail.
Doc gave him a Cake Boss cake and tried to pass this off as a birthday cake, but you tell me this isn't a secondhand cake. The writing on it didn't say happy birthday. Certainly not happy birthday, Stu. It said, you're welcome.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was a you're welcome cake.
It's not a genre of cakes, by the way. I don't know.
And when I pointed this out, it wasn't like he had thought this out. Right. Did you notice that? Yeah, yeah. He was like, well, you know, that's because I knew he was going to say thank you. No, he was making that up. They just got a cake. Get us anything. I don't care what it is. This is a secondhand cake that somebody didn't pick up.
It is more than Pat did, though.
No, I got you a little container full of paper clips.
Those were sitting in front of him just a minute ago.
I put the paper clips in there every day.
You're welcome.
You're welcome.
You're welcome. Okay.
It's not printed on there, but
yeah,
it's implied.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
I believe you are
that means happy birthday to you tomorrow.
Well,
right? So
I believe that you are the owner of the pants. And
yes,
the
I am.
Shirt. Yeah. And the shirt.
The shirt.
Oh my gosh. Do not. I added a shirt, like 4 years ago.
The Can you explain shirt. What you're talking about?
So back in 91, Pat?
Ish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I went to a store and I bought Pat the ugliest
Dolce and Gabbana pants.
Yeah. No, I think they were Ralph Lauren.
Were they?
Yeah, I think so. But they could be Dolce & Gabbana. They are the ugliest pants you've ever seen in your life.
Absolutely
they're
bizarre.
Pink, no, they're salmon paisley, okay? Mm-hmm. And I got him these pants, and he's never worn them. And so the next year, he gave them back to me for my present.
As your birthday present.
It's called regifting.
Right.
And it's tried and true tradition.
And we've been doing this since 1991, okay? We've given the same pair of pants to each other since 1991. Now, a few years ago, I added a luxurious shirt.
Not necessarily matching, but luxurious.
Oh.
Right?
Well, it depends. Right. I mean, if you're going to go by traditional fashion rules while wearing salmon-colored paisley pants.
You really can't.
You can't.
So yeah.
I expect those tomorrow.
So, are you still doing this? Is this still?
Of course we're still doing it.
Yeah, of course we are. We do it every year.
Of course we're still doing it. It's tradition.
Yeah, we just get a box. Mm-hmm. We wrap it, or somebody wraps it for us, and we're like,
here,
happy birthday. I'm not even going to open it this year. I'm going to give it to him in the same wrapping paper next year.
That's smart. That's efficiency.
Yeah, that's right. We need to put those on display someplace because people will be jealous.
Yeah, they will.
You've never worn them.
What? What? How? I mean, I think that's a stretch.
Is he around?
To say never. Never is a long time.
It is.
Is it a stretch or is it untrue? Why are you saying it's a stretch?
It's just because I don't want to call him a liar.
But it's your...
Because we're good friends.
Right.
We spend a lot of time picking out the perfect gift for each other every year. All right. Anyway, what's on your mind today, Pat?
Nancy Pelosi. And
wow. I'm sorry for that.
Yeah, I know. It hurts. But this was such an interesting part of the speech that not very many people have Keith, my producer brings in your birthday present.
Now here's the shirt.
There's the shirt.
And this may be
happy birthday, Glenn.
I don't know, but here's a you didn't even wrap it. So here's this beautiful shirt, okay? And it has a little bit of salmon color in it.
It does.
And a little purple.
Actually, they do kind of match.
And
there's the beautiful pants.
And they are Ralph Lauren, still with the tag.
I cannot believe those are Ralph
Lauren. Oh, and they're 38s. They'd fit you, Pat.
Not anymore, thank you.
Really?
Not anymore.
That is beautiful. Thank you, Pat. That is so meaningful.
You're welcome.
That is a lot of paisley going on there.
I saw these in a store
ugliest of all
in like
time.
1990 or 1991, and I could not believe that they were actually for sale.
Yeah.
Right. From Ralph Lauren.
From Ralph Lauren.
It looks like the entire Ralph Lauren like factory. They had a big
vomit
explosion
of paisley that spilled onto that one pair of pants.
You know what it is? It's like they had a pair of white pants, and then people were so sick to their stomach from eating avocados, they took Pepto-Bismol, it didn't work, and they blew chunks all over white pants.
That is what it looks like.
Yeah. Okay. And this is just good looking.
That's a nice
shirt.
That's just tasteful there.
I think this is nothing but so this tasteful. Is a beautiful, that's a beautiful shirt.
Sort of I want to see it on you on Monday. On Monday.
You know what? I'm going to be invisible on Monday.
You're going to be invisible on Monday?
That's weird, isn't it?
That is
and
weird.
Especially for the day that we premiere a new show with us.
So I will not see you when I come in here. When we're promoting the
when
new
I'm
TV
wearing
show.
These clothes.
That's the only time during the day you'll be
and
invisible.
Damn it, this place. They will not let me wear what I want to wear on TV.
You kind of own the place. So
well,
that's
what they want you to believe.
Okay.
That's what they want you to believe. All anyway, right. Nancy Pelosi.
Anyway, Nancy Pelosi talking about her grandson. And this is, I think she describes it beautiful. Here's what she said.
I'm reminded of my own grandson.
He's Irish, English, whatever, and Italian.
Whatever.
It's the mix. But he looks more like the other side of the family, shall we say. And when he had sixth birthday, he had a very close friend whose name is Antonio, who's from Guatemala. Mm-hmm. And he has beautiful tan skin, beautiful brown eyes, and the rest. Mm-hmm. And such a proud day for me because when
my
grandson blew out the candles on his cake, they said, "Did you make a wish?" And he said, "Yes, I made a wish." He said, "Well, what is your wish?" He said, "I wish I had brown skin and brown eyes like Antonio."
Oh, my gosh.
Wow.
So beautiful.
So beautiful.
So beautiful.
The beauty is in
the
mix.
That's horrible.
That he's ashamed of his race.
That's horrible.
So beautiful.
The beauty is in the mix,
Imagine.
If this was a black person.
If anyone would say, and you know what, my black son, he had green eyes and red hair. He had a friend who had green eyes and red hair and very Irish, you know, that China doll skin. Oh, my gosh. And it was the proudest day of my life when he said, "Well, what I wished for, Dad, was to have white China doll skin, green eyes, and red hair." You would describe that as a proud day?
Oh, the beauty's in the whiteness, Glenn. That's what she would have said.
Gosh. And the thing is, we've heard that story, but not described as beautiful.
Right. It's a terrible, tragic story.
It's terribly racist.
It's terrible, and it's horrible.
And it's not even just racist.
You'd be ashamed of your own race?
Yes. It's not only racist. You want to talk about body shaming.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
Here's a woman body shaming her grandson because I know you want to look like your Guatemalan friend. Oh my gosh.
It's despicable.
Yeah. It is.
I mean, look, any 5 or 6 year old, they could say, there's nothing crazy about a kid saying that. It's the fact that you're praising it.
Yes. Yeah.
And in public. I mean,
look, if you want to say that, like if you're five years old.
Say all sorts of crazy stuff when you're five
years old. But it's not like, "No, honey, you are beautiful just as you are."
Yeah.
That's not the story. It's, we all wish we were Hispanic.
I know.
Sorry, you're ugly.
Would it not be racist if she were to say to the kid, "No, you don't want that. You're beautiful the way you are." Right? Like she was encouraging him to be white.
Yeah.
I'm saying I'm not saying I believe this.
In our current climate,
yes. If you were to say it's okay, it's great that you're white and you should continue to be white. That's racist.
Yes,
because
I think so.
You should be encouraging him to do the opposite.
You should be ashamed of being white.
We have become so worshipful of diversity and so white loathing. That this is held up to us as a really good story, as something beautiful and desirable.
And it's not leading the news anywhere.
Right.
In fact, it's probably not on the news anywhere.
I'm guessing the mainstream media hasn't even.
Yeah.
They haven't even mentioned
it. They don't care. They that's a beautiful thing. No, it's not.
No, it isn't.
That's body shaming.
Right.
That's body shaming. At best, that's body shaming.
Yeah. You're teaching your grandson that, that's beautiful that you don't like your own skin. I can't imagine in anybody.
Can you imagine?
We're supposed to be comfortable in our own skin, right? That's what we're always told. Every time we see a Dove commercial, we're supposed to be like, "Oh, that's beautiful. They're comfortable in their own skin."
Is that the one with the fat ladies that are dancing?
Wow, that word.
No, I mean, I'm seriously.
Wow, that
no,
word.
I'm serious.
No, it's not the one we talked about that one day.
If that is beautiful, I then want you to claim that I am beautiful too. And I'm going to strip down to my underpants and I'm going to dance on screen and I demand that every single person says that's beautiful.
Wow, that
it's
back,
not. Yeah. It might be your taste. It might not be your taste. There's nothing wrong with that. Mm-hmm. But that is not what society has decided is the ultimate form of a body. I don't have the ultimate form of the body. I don't like the fact that my children might be body shamed by somebody maybe like Nancy Pelosi and they're uncomfortable in their skin. But that does not require me to make the pronouncement that is beautiful. I have no problem with the commercial. I have no problem with seeing it.
Mm-hmm.
My problem is that we are being forced
Yes, we are.
to say that Caitlyn Jenner is the most gorgeous woman I've ever seen.
Yes.
She's not. She's not. She's a woman who kind of looks a lot like a dude.
Like an Olympian almost.
Right. Know? Like an Olympian. Yeah.
And it's not just that. It's sexual preference. Your preference must be that you like homosexuality now.
Yeah.
Right? Well, isn't that what we're being forced into? We can't like heterosexual activity. But you have to like homosexual.
Well,
activity.
You should at least try homosexual.
Expected.
You should at least try. You're bigoted, right? If you don't at least try homosexuality. I didn't think it was a choice. I thought you were born that way.
Right.
Yeah, because sexual preference is sort of dead now.
It
right?
is kind of dead.
You're not allowed to have a preference.
You're supposed to say, oh, that's beautiful.
You don't
when you see it on the screen.
Yeah, you can't say, I prefer X over Y, mm-hmm. because that means you're making a decision or something that indicates one is better. And you can't. You can't indicate that one is better.
It's right. It is liberal fascism. And that's the problem. I don't think that the average person who is fat like me, or homosexual, or straight, or bi, or transgendered, I don't think the average person wants anything other than to be just treated like a normal human being. Just, can you not treat me like mm-hmm. I'm a pariah? Okay? That's what the average person wants. I just want to be a part of society. This is who I am, and I'm happy there. They do not want to force everyone else to agree with them. It's not the way we are. We're not built that way. Just accept me for who I am. Don't hurt me. Don't destroy my life because of my choices. And I won't destroy your life. Can't we all just live side by side? That's what the average person wants. But that is not who's ruling this country or our culture.
We just can't. No. We just can't be honest anymore.
Right.
You know, there's that song that goes, every inch of you is perfect from the bottom to the top. It's like you're singing a song with no knowledge of who's hearing it. How do you know that's accurate? You're saying if that's something you can say, then the words don't mean anything because you're saying it to everyone. So if everyone is perfect, then perfect has no meaning.
A wheel is a wheel only because we call it a wheel. I read this philosopher, Saul Kripke, years ago.
Stu and I have been talking about that.
Shut up. And I just remember just being so crazy about how stupid all of this stuff was. But the point is, it's only something because we call it that. Mm-hmm. So you call handicap. What does that mean? That word means nothing. That means nothing. It only means what you attach it to.
Right.
So you've attached it to somebody in a wheelchair that needs a ramp or something else because they can't navigate in the same way that a fully able body can.
They are capped in the way that they are, in the amount they are handy.
Correct. Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. So if you
good
call it
handicap,
we all know when I was growing up, we all know what a handicapped person or a handicapped zone meant, or handicap ramp. By changing it to handy capable might make you feel good in a very short period of time, but eventually handy capable means exactly the same thing as handicapped.
Right. It's right, because these politically correct terms have expiration dates. I mean, if you look back, look at the NAACP. We can't even say what the NAACP stands for. But at that time, it was the okay term to use, mm-hmm. and now it's not. And they have to figure out whether they're supposed to change the name or not.
It's unbelievable. We're living in a mad world.
Yeah.
Pat Gray Unleashed coming up here in just a few minutes on the Blaze Radio and TV Network. Listen to it, watch it, or else Nancy will come for you.
Oh, dear God, I'm going to watch it now.
Mm-hmm.
Simply Safe. I love, 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 love the people at Simply Safe. I have watched them transform from a company with like 10 employees to the fastest growing home security company in the nation. They're now protecting over 2 million people. I don't even know how many Americans they're now employing.
Oh, the fastest in the nation? Jeez.
Yeah.
That happened That happened really quick.
Really fast. Because their service and their product is so good. Now, they've just released their brand new home security system. It is the all new Simply Safe, and it is really great. I have been waiting for this to come out for I think almost 3 years. They've been making changes, and they kept saying, I'm like, when are you going to release it? It's so cool. When are you going to release it? they wouldn't release until he got it absolutely right. They've added new safeguards to protect against power outages, downed Wi-Fi, cut landlines. They have taken hammers to this thing, trying to get it so it would stop working. And it's been designed to work and call the police and keep you safe. I want you to check it out now and save a buttload of money. Go to simplysafebeck.com. Get it now at simplysafebeck.com.
Glenn Beck Mercury. Glenn Beck.
It's been a great week, and I thank you so much for listening. Happy birthday, and you're welcome to Stu.
And happy birthday, and you're welcome to yourself.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I'm going to... What are you doing this weekend?
It's a great question, and it's a question I get answered approximately the time I leave this office today.
Really?
Because I never know.
You get answer.
I have no idea.
On Lifetime?
Oh, it's total, yeah. No idea at all.
My wife was nice to me because it's my birthday weekend. I'm going to see Gaffigan tonight.
Oh, Jim Gaffigan. Nice.
Yeah. Have a safe weekend. God bless.
Beck. Mercury.